Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs. You're welcome to call in and ask questions and make comments during the show. Ring toll-free at 877-876-5227 in the U.S. or 888-810-8322 in Canada. Otherwise, you can ring direct at 530-876-3222. We've got a number of services available through Toward the Light, and we provide near-death studies and support, Reiki and remote healing, psychic, spiritual, grief, and motivational counseling, NDE books and videos, and other products for body, mind, and spirit. I'd also like to encourage you to help support this program and BBS Radio by making a donation or sponsoring a show. For more information, please visit our website, towardthelight.org. This week, I'm very pleased to have a fellow NDE and the author of two wonderful books. One is called Whispers of the Soul, and the second book is called Matters of Spirit. From France, a neighbor of mine, please welcome Josiane Antoinette. Hello, Josiane. How are you?
Hello, Reverend Nightingale. I'm very well, thank you.
It's really nice to speak with you, and I've really been looking forward to this. And first, what I would like to do is invite you to share with us a bit about your near-death experience. Now, did this take place in 1964?
1966.
Okay, it's written on your website and in the book as 1964.
Oh, okay. Yes, so, I think there was a mistake in both places. And
okay.
I'm so sorry I never corrected, but it was in 1966.
Okay, and that was as a result of a surgical procedure.
Yes, it was.
Go ahead and tell our listening audience a bit about it, if you don't mind.
Okay, how would you like me to start by... the first thing I would like to share is that it was in 1966, and I was very ill. And when they took me to the hospital by ambulance, I already felt like there was something really bad going on with me, and one of the reasons being raised in the island of Corsica, where according to our custom, everyone dies at home. I had seen several people, member of my family, dying at home. So when I was in the ambulance, the first sight was that looking at my feet and knowing that there was something very wrong with me. And at this time also, I felt very, very light. Despite that, my fear, because I was only 24, of dying, I knew that I was dying, but despite of my fear, there was something that I felt so light. And at a certain time, I left the ambulance and traveled already while I was in the ambulance. And what we call today, that I know later, I knew was out-of-body experience.
Yes.
And as I did that, it was like a time travel. I went back to my youth, and it was very interesting because I was above the ambulance. I could see the light of the city. I could see everything. And at the same time, feeling very light and not afraid anymore. And then, of course, went back to my body. And when we reached the hospital, the same thing happened again. While they were taking me inside the surgery room, I remember at a certain time there was a group of doctors and nurses talking in the surgery room. First they look at me and look what was going on, and then they were talking among themselves, and all of a sudden I was standing there near a woman there who was probably a nurse. I was standing next to her, and then follow her when she came close to my body. And at the time she, I came close to my body with her, I probably enter again because I say to her, I'm so cold and I'm afraid. And she said, don't worry, I'll be with you. I'll be the last person you see when you fall asleep, and I'll be the first person you will see when you wake up.
Now, did you make that statement when you were back in your body?
Yes, I was telling her, you know, when I came back to my body, which, you know, at the time I didn't know. I later understood this, what was happening. Because at the time, everything looked so normal. Being next to her was normal, and following her was normal. It was very natural. There was nothing unusual, even that I didn't understand. Or it's hard to explain, as you know, Reverend Nightingale, when you have a near death. I don't think we have words to explain exactly what happened and the feeling we had.
It's so interesting, because I was just saying this a few days ago, and in fact you answered the question that I was going to ask, is if this indeed did seem just totally natural, normal for you. You know, you were just popping in and out of your body, and say, what? This is normal.
Well, you know, I found out later that it's very normal, but at the time, I mean, it was a very natural process. It was not difficult, or there was no question asked. It was just a fact. This is what was happening.
Yes.
And so then I went through the surgery and woke up the same day of the surgery, I guess, or the next day. I don't remember at this time. But very soon knew that there was something very wrong. Everybody knew, because they had called my family already. When I woke up, everybody was around my bed. And very soon after I woke up, I started having the experience a lot of what I know it is today to be a spirit, and a lot of faces rushing at an incredible speed towards me, and looking at me very close, and looking at me, some smiling, some not so smiling. And it was very scary, because the only scary part of my near death at the beginning, I really knew that I was dying. And so seeing these faces coming towards me, some that I knew who passed away, and some that I didn't know, that later my family recognized when I described them.
I remember reading that in the book, too, and I'm sure it must have really had a strong impact on your family when you were able to so accurately describe these people.
Oh, yes. Oh, it was incredible. I mean, it changed my life, because I didn't know them, and especially one of them, and who died much before I was born even, came to visit me. And when I described him, and they say, oh, my God, this is him. This is our cousin so-and-so. Never met him, but he was there, and he came to see me. And so it was, that's the part that I remember was the most kind of scary, because I was young, and I was afraid, and I didn't want to die, of course. And and the next phase was all of a sudden these faces were changed to very glowing faces with gentle, surrounded by gentle and powerful light. And it reminded me of the beautiful picture of the angels that I loved so much. And as soon as they came close to me, I felt nurtured and loved and enveloped in their light. And even that they were so light, filled with light, I was not blinded. And I felt this tremendous compassion and love surrounding me. And it was one of the most incredible experiences, because very soon I felt like I was the essence of love and compassion. And it was filling my whole body, my whole being. And I never experienced before such a depth of power and love. And as I always say, it was not only surrounding me, I am the power of love. And I was dancing with this incredible energy force. And I have to say, I loved it.
And at that point, the fear was totally dissipated, I take it.
Yes.
It just vanished.
Yes. And then there was no word or no sound between us.
Telepathic.
But at the same time, I knew that I was dying, and I remember them telling me, yes, you are dying to the world of men, but now you are being born to us. So do not be afraid. We always have been with you, and we all been where you have been with us. So we know you. You just fell asleep during your lifetime, and now you are remembering. And
that is such a good point, because it really, that's exactly how I experience it and see it too, that we do fall asleep when we incarnate into the physical plane.
Yes.
And we've got this imposed amnesia where we do forget who we are.
Yes.
And what is real and true. And then through having experiences like this, we're reminded of what is real and true.
Yeah, and it was like I knew that then when I was there, that it was not only the love around me, I was love, I was light, and that experience was so real as talking to you now.
Yes.
It was so real, and you know, as you know, since you are in the E2, it's such a difficult thing, again, when you come back to the body to find in the world, and we are dreamers.
Oh,
we
yes.
have been, we are, you know, seen as dreamers many times, because not too many people have been on the other side and know how beautiful it can be. So when we bring this back to this earth, we feel a little different.
Oh, absolutely. And you were given an assignment too, as it were, of
yes.
special
and
work.
So, but you know, after this one, then when I was all this energy, all of a sudden I found myself on the top of the on the ceiling, looking down, and I remember seeing this tiny, tiny little gray body down below in the bed, and not knowing who it was, because the person who was on the ceiling was me.
Yes.
And so I couldn't relate to this body, and all of a sudden it's like I flew in again. And when I flew in, I realized it was me. I was in the ceiling and I was in the body. And this was me. And I remember I was so tiny. I was small, very gray. And I felt so much compassion for this person, this body there, not even realizing that it was me.
Uh-huh.
Because the me above was so real that I have no I had no attachment to this body. And it was very later when I thought about it, was very, very puzzling and interesting, because I had two sense of awareness. I was above, and I was above the hospital later, and above my city. And yet at the same time, when I went back to this body, I realized, oh, this is me too. And that I kept with me, as, you know, even today, I know that I am both. And this is the one of the lessons that I learned very well. We are both. We are spirit in a body. And then, so at the time of death, we will become spirit again. But we have been spirit always. We don't become again. We
yes.
are spirit.
Exactly. I see these bodies as like a piece of clothing that we don.
Yes.
And when we're complete with it, we just discard it and move on.
Yes. And it's and then there's the last, well, not the last, but one, the one before the last was, there was a window on the left of my bed, which I remember to that day forever, I will remember, and this bright, the window was like open, there was a bright light, and I flew into this light. And when I flew, I had a feeling that leaving from the top of my head, and I flew there, and I was light, and I became the light. And it was not the light in me. I was the light. I melted into the light. I was that light. And I remember visiting my grandmother and my son, My grandmother was in Corsica, and I went to see her in her kitchen where she, the whole life was in her kitchen. And I saw her, she was sitting on my favorite chair, and I was above her. But I didn't want to, it just happened. And then I went to see my son, who was only 5 years old at the time. And I visited him, and despite that I had great love for them, those are the two great love of my life. But I didn't have this attachment. The love that I had from him, for them, was not the love we have when we are in the body again. I had no attachment, which means I didn't have the ego.
Exactly.
The ego was gone. I didn't need anything from them. I just love them.
And I'm so pleased that you're making this point, because it's such a valid and important one.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many people misunderstand us, because we do love differently.
Yes.
As a result of having these experiences. And just like you described, it's not an attached love. It's not a conditional love. It's not from the ego. It really is such pure, unconditional love. And you can love so deeply and yet still remain detached at the same time.
Yeah.
I can imagine a lot of people right now are just going, what? How can that be? But it's so true, and I experience the same thing.
I agree with you, because sometimes people think that maybe I don't love as much as they love. But yes, I do.
No,
but then at the same time, I want to give freedom to the people that I love.
Exactly.
To be who they are.
It's an interesting point to share with people, that love isn't about owning or controlling someone or something. It's really about freely giving.
And that their happiness makes you happy. You don't depend on them to be happy yourself. And this is something that I learned. It was so beautiful, because it was my son. At the time, I didn't have my second son. He was the only son I had. And I looked at him. I had so much compassion and love for him. Yet at the same time, it was so much light between us. And I had no, and today also, the love we have for each other, the love I have for him is the same. I love him, but the attachment is gone. And I have to repeat this again, attachment, because in our society, attachment means love. If you're not attached, that means you don't love. Maybe attachment is not the proper word. I didn't find a better word yet. So.
I was thinking about that just a few days ago, in fact, too, how people equate love with sex or with a carnal kind of connection with someone. And
mm-hmm.
I don't share that. You know, I'm totally celibate, and I've, you know, pretty much always been that way. That's just the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I love very deeply. But it's not the kind of thing where I use the metaphor putting a dog tag on somebody's neck.
Exactly.
You don't need to do that when you really love someone. And I'm really thinking that as we evolve more spiritually, as people on this plane evolve more spiritually, that they will come to understand that true love and unconditional love isn't about, oh, you've got to be mine and be in a relationship with me only or whatever. You know, in fact, I've got a daughter that I love to bits, and yet I've got an attitude of being very detached, letting her live her life, not trying to impose anything on
mm-hmm.
her, and blessing her in her life path, whatever that may be. And she knows I love her. You know, there's no question there. But at the same time, I'm not physically affectionate. I'm not emotionally attached, but I do feel a very, very deep love for her, and I did for my late husband as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, still do. I mean, he still exists, but just not on this plane anymore. So I'm really pleased that you're bringing up this point, because it's powerful, and it does leave a lot of people perplexed when an NDE comes back and, you know, oh, my spouse has changed, my mom has changed, my daughter has changed.
Yeah. And we have changed.
Mm.
And we have changed, and And I know for myself, when it comes to love, I mean, I agree with you in more than one way. And at the same time, I know that because we had this great opportunity to go and what I see, what I say, to see the face of God, or the face, whatever God is for us, the face of the light, we have been there, we carry this in us. And then many times, I mean, the love we express is very different, in a different way we approach. And I think that we are very lucky this way. And at the same time, in society, it's not very well accepted. So it's a blessing, and maybe it's not such a blessing in society, but we cannot change that. That's what it is.
Well, we came here to set an example, obviously, because we were asked to come back.
I'm also very pleased
that you brought up the fact that you acknowledge yourself as being the light and being that love, because it's true.
Yeah. And I remember the last phase of my near-death experience is when they sent me back. And I remember at the time I had lost my cousin, which I never had a brother, so he was my brother. I loved him. 2 years before my near-death experience, and he's the one they sent to tell me that I had to go back. After he came and we played together, we danced with the angel and with the light together, we had such a great time, and all of a sudden he said, it's time to go now. And I said, go where? I have to go back. And I didn't want to. I argued with him, and I said, no. I didn't even know what going back meant, because it was so real. That
Indeed.
Yeah, I was asking, going back where? I said, you have a lot of work to do. Work? Me? Where? And I mean, it was like, and of course, he walked backwards facing me, and he came into the light to tell me that they left into the light. And I woke up in my body crying, sobbing. And I remember
that one very well.
And the doctor said to me, Georgiane, you can't do that. You're too weak. You have to stop crying. And I was thinking, why? Because I'm going to die? But I couldn't even explain. He said, but why? You should be happy to be back. You're here. And there was such a grief in me. I was grieving. And it was so big, much bigger than me. And it was so big, my experience was so big, that I had no room, no place to put it. And it took me a long time to embody that experience. It took me a long time because I felt like an alien. I felt like I left a certain way and I came back and I was an alien in my own planet. Because nobody could understand.
Well, you know, it's interesting because when I was on the other side, when I was told that I had to come back to this plane, first of all, it wasn't referred to as my home or home planet or anything, but I was told that I had to go back to this other world and work there. Like yourself, I was totally grief-stricken. I just was...
Mm-hmm.
I bore a greater grief than could ever be described in words.
Yes.
And yet this place was never referred to as home or where I belong, and I still don't regard it as home or where I belong, even though I've inhabited this place for a while. It still feels so alien to me. And there are a lot of... It's interesting that, you know, people like us, some NDEers have got the choice to either stay on the other side or to return to this plane. Others, like yourself and me, were instructed that we had to come back here to do special work.
And to me, I know I didn't have any choice because I fought it. And
me
I
too.
Said, no, I
didn't. Me too.
Because it was, and sometimes people say, but you had a child. But then I say, you don't, it was so real. And I was so happy, fulfilled. I had the answer to question of life. It was so wonderful that when they sent me back and I thought, I grieve.
Yeah.
I grieve my home. I mean, there was an, and I remember, you know, Reverend Nightingale walking on this planet for years saying, this is not my people, this is not my planet, this is not my people.
I did the same thing.
For years. Now I finally, years ago, I re-entered. I was reborn again on this planet through my work. But I was walking saying that. This is not my planet and these are not my people.
Well, let's talk about that a bit. When did this change come about? And I'm going to point out that it's very interesting that you were very deeply touched. You came to America before I did, and you were very deeply touched by the Native American wisdom and way of life. And it's interesting to note that even the flag of Corsica, Corsia here, depicts a profile of an Indian.
Oh, well, it's a very dark. He was a Moor, I mean, so. And he was dark. He was from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was very dark, but he saved Corsica from the invaders. So they made him king. And he was, and he has a bandana around his forehead because he was injured. And so to me, I walk on this planet saying that, and I done my work. I started the Bernadette Foundation, helping people who were dying, which I have been doing this since 1980, and realized this year that it's 27 years. I can't believe it.
Wow.
That many years I've been working. And then I was really felt, and when I found through my own needs, because my life was changing, and when I started doing my work, my husband at the time really didn't want me to do this type of work, and he was against everything I was doing. And so he finally left me one day. And so I end up really looking for my own healing at this time. And that's when I found the Native American. And what happened is they reminded me again who I was. They reminded me my own culture. I remember the old ladies looked like my grandmother used to look. They had the same ritual when I visited them because we had volunteer program visiting the elderly in their home, and I started visiting this old woman, Mary her name was, in the reservation, and my God, she helped me so much, and I helped her.
And she was blind, correct?
She was
that
blind.
That was the one who was blind?
Yes, she was totally blind, and she was an incredible woman. And with her, she was teaching me again. She said, but you are like me. We are sister spirits, the two of us. And slowly she reminded me of my own culture by the story she was telling me. Oh, they spend the evening by the river. We were spending the evening by the sea because my family were fishermen.
Yes.
And on, and the legend, they were different than mine. But at the same time, they were the same way of being. And slowly I remember my grandmother and the way I was brought up in Corsica when I was very, very young. And that healed me. It really helped me to realize that, to re-enter and say, because the Native American culture is very grounded on the earth, very grounded. And I needed that. I needed to be grounded again. I needed to be here and to love the earth and the animals and the trees, and realized that, because when I had my near-death experience, I remember being shown very clearly that we all part of the web, the same web. Everything is connected.
Exactly.
To the source. Everything. The tiniest little grain of sand to the biggest planet. We are all together. And so when I knew that, but the Native Americans remind me in a tangible way, in a very grounded way. And
when did that happen? When did you connect with them?
This was in 1984 that I started getting in touch with them. And by accident, you know, it's true that accident happened. Somebody took me to a sweat lodge ceremony, which I didn't really like at the beginning because it was hot, it was dark, it was scary. And then here I am now, I'm leading ceremonies all the time. because I really felt spirit. Finally, I felt this was a place of spirit. I don't have a church, so that became my church, where in the dark I can connect with the spirit, which when I say spirit, is the, I call the spirit with the big S, which is God.
Yes.
And it's amazing what's happening when I do these ceremonies, and people love me to do that because they really feel the touch of spirit. They feel it. And me, throughout the years, I became very interested in their culture and work with them and help them in their ceremonies, and that's the way it happened.
Now, they must have been really struck by the fact that a Caucasian and a European at that really resonated with them.
Well, then many of them were not very happy about it.
Yeah.
Because I am who I am. And but at the same time, they knew that that's what it was. And, you know, they have many, many white people now doing the Sweat Lodge and celebrating and going to the Sundance and doing mostly white, going to these ritual. And so it's more accepted. But I had a great difficulty with the native because of that. Some accepted me with open arms, and some really didn't like me, despite me.
And that's a shame, too, because it was just revealing that they were buying into the lie, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And the one who were involved enough could see the difference, and they knew. And but they have been so hurt. They have been so, we took everything from them, and now we're taking their religion. That's what they're telling me.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't take their religion. I have my own belief. I still believe in angels.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I still do.
Well, tell us a bit about the Bernadette Foundation, because that's very special how that came about as well. And
yes, the Bernadette Foundation came about when, in 1980s, where I had a vision, I guess, an encounter with, first it was in my dream, where this nun came to me, and of course she was a nun, and I said, no way do I want anything, because being brought up in a Catholic religion, I didn't want anything to do with a sister. So what they did in my dreams, they had a choir of angels in my dream one day, and I was so mesmerized by their song, and they said, come with us and sing with us. So I came, and in the middle of this choir, because they were in a circle, was this beautiful woman, which was Bernadette. And she was not dressed as a nun anymore. And I said, who are you? And she said, my name is Bernadette. And I didn't put one and one together. And until I went to Lourdes, and all of a sudden everything remained. And there she, and I knew her. I mean, matter of fact, when Bernadette came, and she's still in my awareness and in my life, but I could smell her. I knew her. I knew who she was. And it was, we recognized each other almost like.
I think that you must be a part of the same soul cluster.
That's what somebody told me when I went to see her body in France last year. And I said, I was there, and I said, you know, I just want to lay next to her. Does it sound weird? And this man who is a medium said, no. You are from the same, you are the same soul, you're part of the same, and I'm not surprised. And I say, you know, I could spend the whole night there and I wouldn't be afraid because her body is still intact. And so I say, I just want to be there, in her essence, in her, and he said, no, it's not strange. I think you and I, and I say, it's interesting because I look at her and it seems like she's me. And I'm her, and it's strange. And I don't say that I have been her in the past. This is not what I believe. But I know her.
Well, that's what I was saying, that you're probably from the same soul group or soul
mm-hmm.
cluster, which means that on a soul level, you are indeed related, and you're always going to be connected.
Yes, and I hope when I go next time, when I leave my body for my last voyage, my last journey, that she be there. I hope
yes.
so.
I think she will be too.
Yeah. Yes, I'm counting on it.
And indeed, you know, paying attention to her when she comes through your dreams, and it's so lucid that that it's real. You can't make something like that.
No, it was so real when I went to Lourdes for the first time with my son, who was young at the time. I walk into a room, and I knew something was different. And I said to the woman who was the guide, and I said, did you change? Was the bed on the other side? She said, yes. How do you know? Oh, and I said, I don't know. It was just a question. But I knew that they changed things around. I knew her house. I felt, and I went this year again. And every time I go there, it is incredible.
Yeah.
I overlook, you know, the commercial part of it. People say it's so commercial. Oh, it doesn't matter to me. It's the energy who counts.
Yes, and you always get that no matter where you are, physically or geographically or what have you. And also the fact that it appears like your foundation is being very successful. It's been intact all of these years. So obviously she has blessed you. Has she blessed you, but, you know, all kinds of wonderful beings, seen and unseen, have blessed you in this work. Now tell me about some of the work that you do with the Bernadette Foundation.
Our volunteer program is a little smaller now because since I wrote my book, you know how it is, the book, they have a life on their own, so they take you wherever they take you.
Yes.
So the volunteer program is not as big, but I'm planning this year to start again. And because I have been asked, many people want to volunteer, so I'm just going to do a training again. And I do spiritual counseling, of course. And I really do a lot of work with afterlife communication. And the reason is I realized, first of all, that I had a gift. I can do that. And that developed many, many more many years after I started the Bernadette Foundation. And that's another whole story. But at the same time, the reason I do is because people, in the case like of a very sudden death, like a suicide, murder, or an accident, people don't have time to say goodbye. So they want to know what their loved one is doing. They want to know, they have a lot of questions about the afterlife. And in the case of suicide leaves such a, it's devastating for the family, devastating.
Yes, it is.
And many times it's devastating for the person who commits suicide because they know the minute they're down and they succeed, they know they can't take it back. They cannot come back. And they have many of them, they regret. They realize the pain they left behind, and there is nothing they can do about it. So I work with them to liberate them and help them to go to the light. And so people consult with me to do that, to help them. And because many of them, and I have a story in my second book about a young man that I helped who committed suicide. He was a client of mine. And then he committed suicide eventually. And it took about 3 months to finally for him to be liberated, because I worked for 3 months with his wife and myself. And so that's the type of work we do. And I do workshop, of course. And to help people to find their true nature, which is, and to remind them that they are spirit. Spirit, because people say, how do you communicate with spirit? But you are spirit. If you are spirit,
exactly,
you can communicate with spirit.
See, I do the same work that you do, and that's so wonderful. I find it so rewarding. And in fact, I heard from my friend today that her son, who's 16, found out that a friend of his from school or something was just killed in a motor car accident. And I just thought, oh my God. And it was so strange because as I was writing the email to my friend, I just said, whoa, I'm seeing something. And I just started describing her son's friend, what I was seeing him doing and that kind of thing, because it's so second nature to me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And to also help them. And I think it's really important that, you know, I try to make the point to people that people are not condemned when they commit suicide, but it's like dropping out of school and they've just got to go back and start again. We can't escape our lessons.
No,
that we have to learn.
That's true.
And I think that as mediums doing the ABCs, after-death communications, it does help bring peace of mind to a lot of people. And it's very, very natural to do this.
Yes, I feel like yesterday I had a lady, I had a session with a lady who had lost a young son. Well, she lost two sons in 4 years,
wow.
118, 125. And so she wanted me to connect it with them. And for the first time in years, I was sobbing because one of them was asking for forgiveness so bad that she looked at me, she said, looking at you crying, I see him. I can hear his voice through you.
Oh.
And it was, and I kept on telling her, I am so sorry. I am so sorry that I'm crying. And she said, no, bless you, because I see him in your words and what you're saying. I know it's him. But I was, the first time it surprised me, because the young man was so sincere for asking for forgiveness for what he'd done, which killed him. And I look at my helper who was there, and I say, I don't know what's happening to me. And so when I was done, and I said, I need to take a walk. And I left and just went to take a walk, because I surprised myself. This young man was in me.
Yeah.
And I was, for the first time, I was like, oh, my God, what happened? He needed so bad to ask for forgiveness. That the mother, of course, was sobbing, and her sister was crying, and there I was. And I say, oh, my God. And later my assistant said to me, are you okay? You think you're going to be able to? Oh, and I said, I'm just fine. I'm fine. It was just what happened, and it was healing for them. And I don't, she said, you don't think you're gonna carry him with you? And I said, no, I don't think so. And if I do, he was not dangerous. He was not a bad spirit. And we would deal with it. And I slept very well. No, I was fine.
Well, I'm really sure that it was such a genuine experience. And I know myself, I never know what's going to come through me or how it's going to be expressed. And that's what's interesting about this work, is that sometimes I might just relay a message, or sometimes I feel like I'm actually embodying that person.
Yes.
And it's very powerful, and so I think that we need to be gentle with ourselves, because, yes, we're very wide open.
Yes, and I mean, she was so thankful, and later my assistant said, you know, this woman, you touch her in a way. I mean, as a matter of fact, she said, I want to know more. I want to take one of your workshops. And I say, okay, but right now I need to take a walk. And so I took a very brief walk just to shake myself out of this. And, I mean, the woman, my essence, she loves you. And I say, well, I'm so happy. When they say I love you, that means I helped. And I say, and that's what it's all about, that I helped somebody. And the rest, that's okay.
That had to leave you with such a good feeling inside.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I think with the work we do, I know that it changed my life, and also I have such a very vibrant life. Vibrant in more than one way, because when I go to bed or when I'm on my own and I keep on saying to God, thank you, God. I am so lucky. And that's the way I feel, Reverend Nightingale, that I finally born again in my body and in this planet, because I keep on saying, thank you for the work I do. I love. I'm so blessed. I am so blessed. And you too. We are so blessed.
Oh, indeed. And you've really touched upon the true meaning of being born again, because when we literally die and then we reemerge onto this plane again, we're literally born again, and we are a new person.
Yes.
We're very, very changed forever as a result of these experiences. And they're a very powerful blessing to share with others.
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't know if it ever happened to you. Somebody one day asked me, do you think that when we die and you come back like that, you are walking, which means like another spirit?
Yes.
Walking. And I say, I don't know for everybody, but in my case, I know that my experience reminded me who I was. It's not somebody who took over my body. It reminded me that I was spirit and that we are all spirit, all of us. And this is what shook me enough to remind me that I am spirit and that I have been spirit in the past. I am spirit now, and I be spirit when I leave this body. I am spirit, period.
And that's such an important thing for all of us to remember, too, because and that's also, I think, what causes people to be afraid of death, because they're so identified with their physical bodies.
Yes.
They think that that's who they are. They think that's the whole of who they are. And so they're afraid to let go of it. There's
yes.
that attachment thing again. But then when people like you and I come about, we're saying, no, that's just a piece of clothing that you finally let go of. You don't need that shirt anymore.
No, and not that, I mean, you know, I don't always love my body because, you know, we are all very vain. I'm still very human. I don't look the way I want to look. I don't, you know, I may dream.
Oh, nor do I.
You know,
nor do I.
But at the same time, I feel like I have been so blessed. I can love my children in a different way now. I can, and by giving them freedom, I'm totally free to be who I am.
Yes.
And,
yes.
I mean, many times, I mean, I'm driving my car and I hear a song and I'm so happy and I say, I'm so blessed. Thank you, God. Whatever. I see an animal, I see a beautiful flower, and I remember that we are all connected. How many people can say that?
Indeed, and I'm hoping that more and more people can start saying that too, because I experience the same thing. I will be awestruck to tears when I look at the clouds and the light shining through the clouds or the ocean. I just go, oh, and I feel that divine love in all of this.
Mm-hmm.
I delight in the smallest things.
You remember in my first book, I mean, Whispers of the Soul, I had taken this young man who was looking for himself. I took him on the mountain in Mount Shasta, and that day it was just after a storm.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
And the cloud was drifting, and the light was pouring through the clouds, and I said to him, this is God. This is God. And I was so excited, and he looked at me, and he said, I envy you. I just see clouds.
Oh, I know. When I read that,
I was like a child. And I was shouting, this is it. This is God. And he was like, he looked at me like, okay, maybe she's a little insane, but I think she has something. And he said, oh, I envy you because I see only clouds, because he was in the darkness. And you can see the beauty of the power of that sky and the mountains. And I said, this is God. God is not in the church. God is not anywhere. It's everywhere.
Exactly.
And it's you. You standing there in front of me. You are God too. And there we are. And he was crying. And he said, I envy you. And that poor young man. And I know he's going to remember that experience for many, many years to come.
And hopefully something will break through that hard shell that, you know, keeps
yes.
him from being able to experience that sense of awe and wonder, you know?
Yes.
Because I've always been struck by
yes.
the magnificent beauty like that and feeling. Oh, in fact, I've had very special relationships where I start talking to the clouds and I can create storms and I could also cause them to dissipate as well.
Oh.
I just feel such a deep connection with all of that, and it's really beautiful. And like you, I can't imagine somebody not being completely moved by that. And
no, he couldn't, because he was too far away from, he was too much in pain.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I remember part of my life, sometime when I used to be walking and saying, I don't belong to this planet, these are not my people. And I used to say to God, you are upstairs, I'm downstairs, and as far as I'm concerned, it's just right. It's just fine. You know, because sometimes life didn't meet me where I want life to meet me. And then I realized later that that's just not the way it works. It flows, and, you know, we have ups and downs and light and dark, and this is life. But when we connect with the light, then we know that eventually we will go back there.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. And
What projects are you working on now?
My only project right now, I'm going to improve my second book. I'm going to add to it. Because I've been asked to write a third book, but I'm not ready yet. It's not coming the way I want it, so I'm just going to do that. And this year, I'm going to do a few workshops, and I'm very connected with friends because my book has been published there, so I have people from France coming, a group coming for a workshop. Other than that, I'm going to take care of myself this year.
Good,
and I will see clients and take it easy because I have been traveling so much the past 2 years. And my mother passed away last year. I didn't have even time to grieve. So I think this year I'm going to take the time to really look at my life. And it's my birthday very soon, as you know.
Yes.
And I'm getting old, so I think I'm going to look at this.
We're both the same age, just a month apart.
I know. So I'm looking at this and...
Yes.
And looking, and I think I'm going to let the universe really guide me, and I'm going to, of course, start a volunteer program again. We have volunteers, but we're starting a brand new training. And other than that, I think this is what I'm going to be. I'm going to let people find me and do what I have to do. I do the best, and we shall see.
Now, with your organization and the volunteers, is that just in your local area in California?
Well, yes, because it's the only place that I can. I have been asked at different places to train volunteer, but as you know, with the expenses that traveling costs, I can't do that.
Yes,
so if they, I always said, if you want to come to our training here, but I cannot travel as much because it's very expensive. And I traveled too much the past 2 years, and I'm very tired.
God bless
you. So I think I'm going to stay close to home.
Now, where do you conduct the workshops?
My workshop, I conduct in the summer, I conduct them in Mount Shasta, where I have my home there. And in the fall and winter, I'm in Davis near Sacramento, where I have my office, and this is where my home office, I would say. And this is where I do workshop in that area, because most of my clients are from this area.
Okay, well, we should give the listeners your website, which is mattersofspirit.com.
Yes.
And that's also the name of your second book, and that's the one that you're going to be revising.
Yes, Matters of Spirit.
Mm-hmm. Matters of Spirit. This is really, really lovely, and so people can contact you through your website, mattersofspirit.com.
Yes.
And you're a minister as well, and wonderful work that you're doing. So you're just going to work on some more writing projects and not really traveling, trying to just take it easy. And
being home a little bit and enjoy my life and my kitties and that I miss when I travel, and trying to be a regular person just for a little while. If that is possible.
I know, I think, oh, what does that feel like, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm really pleased that you're doing this work, and you've done such a tremendous service. And bless you, you've known about this, you know, for a lot longer than I have, because as I've shared before, I didn't even find out about near-death experience, you know, the word, and that there were people that knew about this, that I was in a little shell for all these years until the late 90s, and now I'm very, very active.
Oh, well, you know, to me, it was thanks to Dr. Moody. My first book that I read in this country after my near-death experience when I came was 1968. Dr. Moody, he changed my life, because I never heard anything about near-death experience before him. And then after that, I realized, matter of fact, I had a great pleasure to be on a show once with him, on a TV show, and I met him personally, wonderful man, and very passionate about the subject, and that changed my life, because I was not alone all of a sudden having that experience. There were other people, so we didn't feel so alone anymore.
Well, that's wonderful. And if you're talking about life after life, last week I actually interviewed Peter Schalke, who is the wonderful, wonderful person who produced the film Life After Life.
Ah.
And for everybody to know, through Toward the Light, you can order a copy of Life After Life, both on video and DVD format.
Ah,
so
wonderful. It's a wonderful. It changed my life. Because I thought, you know, like many of us, we thought there was something wrong with us.
Yes. And
then after that, we realized, oh, my God, there is more than us. So
there are a lot of us, millions of us, who have near-death experiences, and that's really wonderful. And I do have a couple of announcements, and then we're going to have to sign off for this week. The hour just goes by so quickly. First of all, Toward the Light is going to start broadcasting on Sunday afternoon evenings at 2 o'clock Pacific Time, 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, and 10 o'clock p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, starting next Sunday, 4th February. Toward the Light will be broadcast on Sunday afternoons, changing from Monday nights to Sunday afternoons, so we won't have so many sleepyheads missing out.
Mm-hmm.
And again, we've got Life After Life available. We've got The Complete Idiot's Guide to Near-Death Experiences available through Toward the Light. That's by PMH Atwater. And we've also got Surviving Death by Scott Degenhardt, and a book called More Than Meets the Eye by Yvonne Perry. And I'm also putting your books onto my website too, Chosyan, as I always do when I have these books and filling up the books page on towardthelight.org. It has been such a joy having you, and I'm so pleased that you joined us, and want to send a lot of love and blessings your way, that you have a good year. And, of course, we'll be talking to each other.
Yes, and thank you very much for all your work and all your efforts and to bring up the awareness about the near-death experience. God bless you.
Oh, and bless you too, my dear. This is so wonderful, and I want to remind everyone, it is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. We will talk to you on Sunday. Mark your calendars once again, Sunday, 4th February, and we're going to have Reverend Dick Dingus on our show next week. So blessings and light to all. We'll talk to you on Sunday. Cheerio for now.